Hi, this is an ode that I wrote to Buster Keaton. A man so brilliant that he might be cheating. Dare I say, he slay the stage with his ostentatious courage. Or his bombastic, fantastic stunts that are not fake, no plastic. In prehistoric film, an era where leads were the steeds of box office needs, he did the deed of planting the seed, signing the deed, and clearing the weeds to make the place for a new quality of actor. Charm. You may ask, who is doing this now? Leo? Angelina? Dad? Is mom? Only a few can harness the power of charisma. Of them are Buster Keaton, a name that cannot be littler. Another was on a roof, and he was a fiddler. The other was his contemporary Hitler. Oh wait, that's Charlie Chaplin. This joke had nothing to do with the actions of Hitler, but rather the similar appearance between the two men. Welcome to this hump day evening breeze. As palpable as black coffee on a black as midnight night. I am Zach, and you are?
Ben, and welcome to the Movie Vault.
And we have quite a mood going on tonight, after we had just previously watched Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, and I felt very sad and lonely and depressed.
It's a very, very heavy watch.
And
Take your time with it.
I felt the need to increase the happiness in the room. I just felt Bob all around us.
he was a presence that was felt. Mm-hmm. And now he is gone because Zach said that wonderful poem.
Mm-hmm. And we have lots of things going on, more exciting than Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. It's kind of a busy week. We're preparing for a wedding, not yours. Well, we're kind of preparing for yours. Well, I mean, both, I guess. But another one.
One that's sooner.
Yes, one that's this Saturday, which is your birthday coming up.
Oh, but who cares about that?
And you're going to catch up to my age.
And maybe, finally.
And maybe I'll catch up to your height.
After 1 month. Well, probably not.
Hey. And, yeah. So, we have coming up, this isn't the first of our, but after this film, we're going to be doing the 60s series with three films, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, that's coming up. And then we're also going to have a few other special episodes coming up and also some other things in the works that might be within the Movie Vault umbrella.
Yes.
That we may have accidentally spoiled in a previous episode.
We definitely did not do that. We definitely didn't spoil a fantastic idea that I came up with.
Yes. So today we're reviewing Sherlock Jr. By Buster Keaton and starring Buster Keaton.
Yes. And this movie was directed by Buster Keaton. It was written by three other guys who probably, it doesn't even matter what their names are because nobody will remember who they are. It stars Buster Keaton. Cinematography by two guys who you won't know. Edited by Buster Keaton.
Hey,
music by Clubfoot. Music was sheet music because they would play the music in the theater. So they're listing other people who have made music for the re-releases of the film. It produced by Metro Pictures, distributed by Metro Goldwyn Pictures, so you actually would have heard of them. They've been around forever. Runtime's only 45 minutes, so if you ever use the excuse that we review movies that are too long, well, this is the episode for you. The language is silent, which is hilarious, but it has English intertitles. It made $448,337 at the box office. I have no idea. Well, that's probably not adjusted for inflation, so it probably was a pretty good turnout. I don't know what the box office was looking like in the year 1924 when this movie came out.
And I quote, Buster Keaton was underwhelmed with the $448,000 and $333,000.
Okay, so it really wasn't. I thought it might be a lot, but maybe comparatively to how much they spent, it still wasn't a ton.
This is 25 years into his career of being the biggest star. So right. I'm assuming that it barely underperformed and he took it as a big hit.
This is, I think Chaplin existed during this time, but I think he would become even bigger later because Chaplin's biggest films come in the 1930s. Hmm. Modern Times, City Lights, The Great Dictator. Mm-hmm. The big three, none of which I've watched. Buster Keaton made this movie, Sherlock Jr., and it's a fairly... It's actually a more complicated plot than you might think.
Well, Ben, we're rehashing our old, what is the phrase?
rehashing our old hash brown. No, rehashing our old phrase.
Oh, I don't know.
Or phase.
Is that a phrase?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, we're rehashing. I was going to say rehashing water, but isn't that retreading water?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, anyway.
We're treading old water.
All right, we're rehashing old water of movies about movies. As you can see, from the beginning of time, beginning of movie time at least, movies have been intrigued about movies.
It's almost like with Buster Keaton and we just did Sunset Boulevard, it's almost like we got this little series running on, yeah, movies about movies. Actually, you could almost categorize Inland Empire, Sunset Boulevard.
How often will Buster, we bring Inland Empire?
Buster Keaton into a series of three because, and they're really spaced out really nicely, like 40-ish, 50-ish years apart between the, I'm sure it's not exactly even, but what you see what I mean? 1924, 1950,
48 years,
2006.
Okay, 56 years.
56 years. So a kind of similar time in between the films. And in each era, there's movies about movies. And the movies about movies become more complex as it goes because there's more layers of movies to sort of retread, rehash old water, if you will.
Yeah, I'd say it's like when you, the more Lego sets you get, the more diverse your pieces you're going to get when you put your hand in the box.
Yeah, absolutely. The premise of this movie is that Buster Keaton is a projectionist who's in love with a girl. He has a rival who's known as the local sheik. They neither have much money. The only way they can try to impress her is by giving her money. The sheik steals the pocket watch of the girl's father, pawns it, and buys her chocolate, and then somehow pins the crime on Sherlock Jr., who's reading a book on how to become a detective. So he's following the steps, but it's not really working out for him. He is dejected, goes back to his projectionist location, falls asleep, which you kind of, I mean, you can tell he falls asleep, but you kind of forget about it. At least I did after a certain point. Cool sequence where he like is literally jumping into the movies and like acting as part of them, which I think probably influenced lots of other movies after that with that particular technique. And then it goes into this whole subplot where the local sheik is now kidnapping the girl and he saves her, and it's just it's amazing. And the stunts in this sequence are really, really cool, and they were all done by Buster Keaton without stuntmen. They're all real.
Well, back then, you know, the laws were out of hand, right? The lack of laws, at least. And I remember reading something about A Clockwork Orange, where Stanley Kubrick opened, I forget the actor's name that plays the main character.
Hi, Anna, you're on the Movie Vault.
Oh, no.
Do you have anything to say about Sherlock Jr.? I interrupted Zach's train of thought, but it was worth it to have you guys on the Movie Vault.
We just had a quick question.
Okay, what's your question?
What?
Ask Movie Vault Nation your question.
Do you brush your teeth in the shower?
I do not brush my teeth in the shower. Zach?
Ask Zach.
Zach, do you brush your teeth in the shower?
No.
All right, thanks, guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anyway, back to your original train of thought.
Yeah, okay. The lack of laws. So I was talking about Clockwork Orange, which had, so they have that machine where they keep your eyelids open in that movie, and it scratched one of the actor's corneas, and Stanley Kubrick's like, "All right, well, we'll focus on the other eye with the camera."
You know?
But with this and Buster Keaton, it's like Buster Keaton's like on top of ladders falling, and these are all real stunts, right? Their special effects were effects. That's they didn't have the special.
Well, think about how were they able to perfect stunts over time by a bunch of people messing up stunts?
Yeah, like, true. People had to die.
Yeah, actually.
Why do we have so many computer generated images? Because people died. If not, I mean, imagine Jurassic Park with real dying. But anyway, so Buster Keaton's like coming out of people's stomachs. He's climbing. He's like standing up while cars are going really fast. And other people are too. Buster Keaton's not the only person. The other guys were.
He's just one of the more memorable and famous
of those early stunt actors. And he's really a jack of all trades. He's a slapstick comedian. I mean, think about the scenes, the train scene where he's walking on the train, just like classic, funny slapstick humor. It is very, it's very well executed.
Mm-hmm.
It's, have you ever watched The Three Stooges?
Yeah, of course.
That's like classic slapstick humor. But somehow this being set and framed in this film, it just feels a little bit more intelligent than like The Three Stooges. Even
though it might be more of the Marx Brothers, which influenced The Three Stooges.
Right. Yeah. It could be more of the Marx Brothers. Mm-hmm. But before even the Marx Brothers was Buster Keaton. So true. I think, I mean, that Marx Brothers might have been active. I'm not 100% sure. But finally, he awakens. The girl realizes that the identity of the real thief and everything is better. There's a really cool end sequence where he's with the girl in the projectionist room, and he just like follows what the lead in the like romantic movie that he's seeing and she's not seeing. He just follows the lead, and it like works out for him. And I think that's sort of the end of the movie.
It's funny because he'll pause in mid-sentence, like waiting to respond to see what the guy in the film did. So yeah, a lot of slapstick type of humor. Great timing by Buster Keaton and most of the things that he does. I don't have really any complaint about this film.
No, neither do I.
I mean, do we limit our ratings? I mean, we keep talking about this, our ancient rating system that we went away with a long time ago. Do we limit it based on what era the film was in? You know, like, do we judge how good these stunts were even though they didn't have much to work with? I don't know.
Exactly. It is difficult because how can you really compare, thinking about my other five-star movies, they're generally from a more,
is this
recent
a five-star
era.
Film for you?
No.
Oh.
I said my other five-star okay. movies, but I mean, comparing it to a five-star movie of mine, like in my collection of
five-star I'm saying,
movies.
Can you though?
No, I don't think you can, because most of them are from a more recent era. The filmmakers were only able to be more ambitious because silent movies were made in the 1920s that stacked and stacked and stacked to the point that they could start doing stuff that was like as ambitious as a Dune Part One, or I'm just saying buzzworthy films now.
Barbie Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I mean, Oppenheimer, that would have blown Buster Keaton's mind.
I'm gonna
watch that.
I'm gonna bring this
up.
But
do you think he would have hated it? Honestly, I don't know.
No, I think he would. It would have been like that guy that went up to Alexander Graham Bell and listened to the first telephone and died.
Yeah, it could have been like that.
I think it'll be like that. I think Buster Keaton would have a lot more questions if he came to here. He'd have a lot more. He'd be like, what are these computers we're all looking at all day?
That is a good point. He would not just question.
Quick question. Quick interjection question. Is Nolan's Oppenheimer Lynch's Inland Empire?
Oh, that is a great question.
Dare I say magnum opus?
It's definitely. I need to watch it again. Maybe. I only needed to watch Inland Empire once to know that it was.
I want to watch Inland Empire again.
Well, I do probably need to watch Inland Empire
again. I know I'm going to regret it midway through. But
I wonder if I will have the same reaction to Inland Empire.
Let's wait until we watch The Return for Twin Peaks and see Laura Dern again and get back on the train.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway.
Is this Buster Keaton's Inland Empire?
No.
Probably not.
Buster Keaton was disappointed with this film. He said it was all right. Quote.
We need to watch the ones he thought were actually good.
Yeah.
But this is one of the famous ones, so.
Well, yeah, I think time really does saturate. I mean, influence is what saturates a film into time, right? I think the reason Star Wars is so big because it influenced so many other things.
Right.
It's not necessarily that something is good. It's its influence.
Things gain new meaning over time.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think like a direct, like back then, some films were not critically received well. And then people like Roger Ebert will come back and like change their ratings, you know, 10 years later, based on what the perception of the film is now, or some deeper meaning that the film has taken upon that the director didn't maybe intend originally, or that the audience didn't get originally. So, I think movies really are just about thought processes. So as the society changes, so can the perceptions of films.
Absolutely. But do you think that we lost something when we moved to the talking film era?
Well, to quote Gloria Swanson, yes, maybe there is something to be lost because, what's her name? The actress. Oh my gosh, I'm drawing. Gloria Swanson's character says that she can act with just her face. She doesn't need words to describe. I think we have lost facial acting in modern film. I think a lot of our acting is using the root word of the word acting and doing physical actions rather than trying to express something. I'd rather do more expression than actions.
And if you think about it, embodying another person is an extremely difficult task. And we generally think of the like obvious things first. So like big movements, but the like really subtle like contortions that your face makes and things like that. That would be a lot more difficult to train yourself to do. You can't really like see what I guess you could like look at a mirror for a long time and like work on different
Well, really,
things.
If you think like the but, greatest actors of our generation are masters of facial acting on yeah. top of regular acting.
Yeah, they like bring something. You just see it
yeah.
in them.
That's
it's
where,
natural.
I mean, that's like I think of Robert Downey Jr. just won his first Oscar for his role as Strauss in Oppenheimer. And I think a lot of that was facial acting because a lot of that is just him reacting to these allegations, to the court case, to...
Yeah, it's just him in a room.
Exactly. So it's just like his... he has a serious face the entire time. So to the common moviegoer, it's maybe an underwhelming performance because he's not, you know, shooting a laser at Thanos, right? But for those who maybe are paying a little bit more attention, I'm not saying that's me, even though it is, but I'm not saying that. It's a very complicated thing that you have to do. I mean, method acting is another process that actors have to get into.
Yeah, but that again is another development that Buster Keaton would have never thought of. Buster Keaton was playing himself in this movie, essentially.
He didn't have to do anything.
He was his stage presence. I mean, I'm sure he didn't act like this in real life, right? So he is playing a character, the character of Buster Keaton, which is, I believe, his nickname. Mm. But in all his movies, he played Buster Keaton. He wasn't trying to... So I guess in some senses, he was method acting. Like, doing these stunts and stuff was... But he wasn't thinking about it like that.
Well, it's almost a more meta process. He's method acting across films.
Yes. Yeah, but not in a, like, we're making a series of movies type of way. It's just like, I'm making one movie. It's about this. This is the plot. And, of course, Buster Keaton's in it, and he's goofy and he's silly. And it's going to be hilarious, and people are going to love it.
Well, I don't
and
think
I only made $400,000, so now I'm mad. You have to make another movie.
So it's an interesting thing into it, going deep into his psyche. He knew he was the best at the time. People told him he's the best. In fact, Roger Ebert is later on. You know, the rise of the modern critic came about after Buster Ebert's time.
Senior. No, yeah. I wish. That'd be so funny.
The first critic. He said Keaton had an extraordinary period from 1920 to 1929 where he worked without interruption, and he is the greatest actor-director in the history of film, which may be actually true. You know, many times these words of, you know, accolade are over the top and embellished, but in this case, you don't see that many. The roles have really diverged where you're either a director or you're an actor or you're an actor turned director.
Yeah, you're right, because like, think about Clint Eastwood. He is in some of the movies he directs, but you think of him in his acting era and then his directing era.
Mm.
And it's just like, okay, he's in a few.
Well, it's like
movies.
John Travolta. I mean, it's like anybody who's in these roles, they had to earn it by acting.
Yeah.
Buster Keaton was basically given the key to both of these roles. He was
and editing,
apparently. He was postmodern before postmodernism existed. He was the Donald Glover of his time, right?
True.
So he had these two different fields mastered. And Entertainment Weekly said that he is the seventh greatest film director, which may also be true. I don't really know how to test that. I don't know how.
And again, it goes back to comparing eras. It gets very difficult, especially as more time is spanned in between them. But I could definitely understand the argument for that
only based on one movie, but being able to envision what some of his other movies would probably be like and seeing the value and the entertainment in them. Yeah. It's interesting because a lot of people, I think we've encountered this in some senses. A lot of people would be turned away by this movie just simply because it's a silent movie and because it is in black and white, which I guess when I was younger, I probably would have thought the same way. And before I like conditioned myself to be able to watch many different styles of movie and film, I guess it's like anything. You're just training your brain to be able to comprehend something or have the patience to really take something in. But I think it's interesting that more people don't try to digest something like this and see that it's actually like really funny and entertaining.
Yeah,
and it's not a there's nothing like bad. It's just like a kind of wholesome. I mean, I guess you got the good guy and the bad guy, and there's nothing like sleazy or dark or. It's just nice. It's just nice to watch.
You're just saying that because we just watched
Fire Walk With Me, which was like
darkest film,
dark ever. And depressing and sad.
Maybe one of the darkest films I've ever seen.
And coming off of Twin Peaks, which is a dark show but also kind of lighthearted, it's very weird. But I'm sure we'll get into that sometime in the future.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I think you're right. Wholesome is a good word to use because I think this film and this era of film, I mean, we're going to use this as the federal head of the representative of all of this era, right? Because that's what we do.
Right? Yeah. And we haven't had the time to watch really very many.
Well, we should watch The General, films. Which is his masterpiece, Orson Welles says.
Yeah, we should watch The General. We should watch some Chaplin, but we only have so much time.
Yeah.
And we have new developments in our life that will continue to make it that way. So
exactly.
We've got to pick our battles.
But it's wholesome because there is this addition to the film in this era of film where authenticity is guaranteed, right? You're still hearing there was a lot of drama that happened. Like this film was going to be co-directed and then he didn't work well with the other director. So that he had enough power to put that director on another film to direct. Right. So there's a lot of background things going on. So there is some sleaziness in the background, but in the film, every practical effect is practical effect and every character is simple. Everything is just literally black and white, right? Figuratively and metaphorically and physically. But yeah. And I think it makes it more wholesome. I think just knowing, I don't know, because I feel like the studios really get involved in films these days. Maybe that's what I'm trying to express, that we even think of, I'm going to relate it to Twin Peaks again, to David Lynch. He's on my mind. He really is on my mind, like, a lot right now. I even watched Mulholland Drive this week, and we'll get to that at the end. But David Lynch is in, the studios forced him to do this big reveal earlier on in Twin Peaks than he wanted to. And you see that so often, right? You need ratings, you need money. It's just to keep everybody employed, put food on the table for your daughter that you never see. But yeah, so you had a lot less of that in these films. So you could really get away with having the vision go from Buster Keaton's brain straight onto the screen, and it's a great easy pathway for him.
You know, I wonder if that was lost in the silent film era. I could see a couple different ways how it could get misconstrued, because people talk about auteur theory starting out of the French New Wave and people like Godard who looked back at movies and what they liked and they were like, you know what's really important? It's not the actors. I mean, they're important. They have a role to play and they can be good for marketing. But what's really important in a film is the guy who's pulling the strings, the director. Of course, conveniently, they are directors, so they're going to say that. But at the same time, they have kind of a good point. Now, Buster Keaton, you could say, was an auteur and was given the reins, like you were saying, to do what he wanted, and to he didn't necessarily write the movie, but he had all this creative freedom of what he wanted to do with it and the stunts he wanted to do, and even, like I said, he even had the power of editing, which I know a lot of directors are heavily involved in editing, even if they aren't credited as the editor. But what people remembered Buster Keaton as was not Buster Keaton the director, but Buster Keaton the actor. And as the silent film era ended, how movies were directed and studios, I'm sure, increasingly
had power over the time that film became popular. Like, in, like anything, big businesses tend to pop up and they keep running and running. And so it wasn't until there was a shakeup in the 1960s. People, you know, talked about Cary Grant or these film stars in the 1940s and 50s. And I know you can pick out good movies, but people still talk about Tarantino. Sometimes this is on. I think it's like the 1950s as being like a bad era of movies, even though there's probably not truly not really a bad era of movies because there's so many you can always pick out good mm-hmm. ones in any decade.
And I hope not, because we've done a few 1950s films on the podcast. But I think you're right. I think Billy Wilder knew exactly what you're saying right now, because he even had in his film Sunset Boulevard, which we're going to reference a lot, which is also referenced in a David Lynch film, Inland Empire. And I didn't realize is in Mulholland Drive as well, as I'm rewatching it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Huge influence.
Billy Wilder knew this because Norma Desmond is the one that's famous, right? Max, her ex-husband, is not famous. He's the butler at her house. He kind of, and he was a director, right? He directed her. So it's like, a lot of times the audience really is, I mean, do we know more about the Russo brothers, or do we know more about Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth?
It's still like, it, and you're right, it's still
it's
like
always going to be like that, because it's like, it's the baby food that's right in front of us. You know, we're not going to know the hands that gave it to us. It's more of, yeah, and that's how it's always going to be, and that's fine. But the vision that comes on the screen is the director. And I think there are other elements like, there are so many people working on film that influence the way that it comes to be when it's before your eyes. But the director really is the ringleader of it all. And that's an obvious statement. But at the same time, it's like, if you let a director with good vision use his vision to its fullest, those are the best films that we see ever.
Yeah. And it's not an objective thing, but you can definitely tell in the court of public opinion. Think about... We keep referencing them, but the movies that have been the most popular over the last year have been Dune Part 2, director heavily involved. Barbie, still, I know I gave it like 2.5 stars or whatever, but still, like, it's a director-driven movie.
Yeah,
Greta Gerwig is still like an auteur director. And Oppenheimer, which is another director-driven movie, is actually pretty encouraging. Even if Dune is technically like a franchise movie that's based on a book, like it has a different feeling than some of the other movies that we've, and Marvel would kind of try to market their movies like they were these auteur movies, but you started to see the wheels fall off when they brought in like Sam Raimi, and the movie just felt like sort of Sam Raimi, but just like a lot of studio input.
Well, yeah, that's
and it was just like a studio movie with Sam Raimi, like. Artism. It's just a stupid word. Sam Raimi styling. That's what I meant to say. It's getting really late here. Artism.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think Taika Waititi was the face of that for Marvel, right? Let's let the directors do
and
what they want.
And it went good at first.
Yeah, and then he also created one of the worst films in all of Thor because of studio influence and because of... I mean, honestly, they made him short in the film. There are lots of reasons.
You can't have your cake and eat it, too. You can't be a studio and say, we want to hire a guy who's going to be innovative, but then also limit him in so many ways. Mm-hmm. That's what is happening at Marvel. And I know it's not even to dog on Marvel. It's just they're the easiest example. I'm sure you could come up with a lot of other
examples. I think A24 has fallen into this as well.
Yeah.
I don't think they have like heavy bylaws for each director to make, but I think they've... lacked clear directors with good visions, like you know, in a lot of their films, and that's going to be inevitable when you just create so many films, right?
Yeah, and they became popular because of certain films, but I think in some extent, A24 has always been a let's just keep swinging kind of studio. But it's also funny because they are marketing themselves as an independent film group, but it's become very commercialized. Mm-hmm. So it is almost against the spirit of independent filmmaking. But if that's what we need these days to get a couple good movies out,
yeah. I mean, the people
then I guess it's all right.
The people who watch A24 movies as if they are the extent of film are those people who are the main majority of Letterboxd.
I mean, they're kind of like the Marvel of people who like movies. you know.
Yeah, it's like not a, it's a layer below. You know, it is a step above, I'd say, the common moviegoer.
Yeah.
Right.
But is it any better? Maybe it'd just be better to be the maybe you'd be more enjoyable to be around if you're just the common moviegoer. But there doesn't have to be levels to all these things either, I think, is what you finally realize after a certain point. You get really into it, then you're like, you start to have the freedom of being like, okay, now I can really choose what I like. I don't have to be subservient to all the public opinion or the film critic opinion. But at the same time, as we've said, we were talking with Jake, who's going to be on the podcast here soon, hopefully. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, if you look in at older films that are considered classics for good reason, like, you shouldn't feel bad that you like movies that are classics, just like Sherlock Jr. or...
Well, we have this conversation a lot, you know? Should we like Inception? That is a hard question.
Well, Inception's its own case.
No, I'm saying...
No, you're right, though.
Has it been politicized in the movie world?
Yeah, because if you say you don't like Inception, it's kind of like... It feels like you have this edge over other people.
That's what I'm saying. So then, there's a Punnett square, okay, Ben? If you like... It's like Inception and Citizen Kane. Well, if you guys...
It's almost like you have to like it a certain way. Like, you can like it, but you have to like it in the right way.
No, you can be pretentious or dumb. There is no alternative.
Yeah. That's a good point. At some point, you have to pick. That's what I have to say. You have to pick whether you want to be pretentious or dumb.
And I hate both, but I hate dumb more.
Yeah, I'd rather be pretentious. I think being pretentious is fun sometimes. I think I've said that like 5 times.
Which is pretentious. On the podcast.
Yeah. So, but that's just how I'm wired. Not everyone's wired that way. And you can be dumb.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, you really can. I think that's the thing. You can like Inception. You can like DC films. I mean, that's even worse. But at the end of the day, I think you're right. And I've said this analogy, this is my 3rd time, but your movie journey is like going through the forest or a jungle, right?
I really like this analogy.
Mm-hmm. And A24 is a big sub-development now. You know, the more
you're right. They're taking down the rainforest.
It used to be Sunbury. Now it's becoming the boom in Westerville.
Well, it used to be the village of Sunbury, and now it's the city of Sunbury.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Very localized reference for our Japan listeners. But, yeah, hopefully you guys got Google Maps.
What you
got
to know is they have Samsung. Sunbury, they have Samsung. In the U.S., there's villages and there's cities. My dad really breaks this down for me. And you have to be like a designated a city. I forget. I don't even know what the requirements are. But
your dad's
like
a real civil engineer.
Yeah.
He even made a homemade
March Madness bracket.
Yeah, on Excel.
Yeah, he uses Excel a lot, even for his profession. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Got to get your practice.
Yeah.
And those programs and stuff.
Yeah, this is what it is. Marvel is like Amazon, not the forest. And A24 has quickly become a Columbus, which is a booming city. Like, it's a small city, but it's a growing city.
But they're building Intel.
And it's the, and did you hear that Google bought property up north?
Yeah. Well, are they just putting data centers in?
We'll talk. Lots of conspiracies going on.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Curious.
Yeah. But anyway.
Is Columbus going to become the new LA? No, it's not.
It'll
always be Columbus. I'm sorry.
New Hollywood over here.
No, Columbus doesn't. Anyway, we can talk about Columbus some other time. Yeah. When we do our Columbus movie review.
Oh, man. Wait, what do you mean?
I'm just making
stuff like the up movie. Now. Is there a movie Columbus?
Well, there is a movie called Columbus, but it's not about Columbus.
Is it about Christopher?
It's not about Christopher Columbus or Columbus, Ohio. I'm pretty sure it's about something else. I can't remember, but I know there's a movie called Columbus.
Hmm. Interesting. We could do Columbus-based films. Ohio-based films.
That would be cool. Actually,
We've done two. Heather's and Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. If we wanted to do, if we wanted to really gain connections, why do I always come up with ideas on the podcast?
I don't know.
But if I don't tell you this now, I'll forget, and then I won't tell you. We should review some movies that are from Ohio-based directors. And then we should invite them to come on the podcast.
Mm.
We need a director. It's high time we have another director on the podcast.
Yeah, I miss Bernie. I do. He was so nice to us.
I still got that Bernie interview just sitting somewhere that I need to edit. It's a pain to edit, though.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got that one edited.
Yeah. Wait till you're in the stable position.
You're right. Then you're going to be like, all right, Ben, here's your to-do list.
Yep. Get Bernie out there. Yeah, it's been over a year.
It has.
He was on like in the 80s, low 80s episode. He might have been episode 80.
And we've only done like 30 episodes in a year, but it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, we're booming right now.
We are booming.
Just like Buster Keaton.
And in light of recent news, it looks like we're still going to be booming for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're both going to be at OSU.
Wow.
Working together.
Working side by side, kind of. Kind Not of. Exactly. Yeah. But
floor by floor.
Floor by floor.
Yeah.
Maybe I would say we could eat lunch together, but we probably can't. It probably will never line up.
I'm not going to be on campus.
Yeah.
I'm going to choose to opt out of in-person classes.
Oh, that's right. You're not even in your clinical rotations yet.
No, not even close. So we've got two more years. Yeah.
Man, I could be.
You could be like traveling the world as a traveling nurse, and I could be still in medical school three
that's
years
That's true.
Now.
I probably will not be doing that, but I could be.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that could change in 2 years.
Yeah. That's true. A lot of things hopefully will change.
Hopefully positive developments.
And negative.
But there will be negative ones.
I hope there's a little negative.
Just a good amount.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you want to do some movie highlights?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me get...
I really have almost close to nothing to say, so I'll get mine out of the way first.
Get her out.
Basically, I have been watching... So we watched Eyes Without a Face, which we are reviewing. So I won't say much about that because we're going to have a review. Jake's going to be on, so that'll be exciting. You know, Jake Hoyer's been on several times. You all know him and love him. In class, in my Buddhism class, we watched The Yogis of Tibet. It was a documentary. Weirdest things about it were I have never seen people do yoga the way that the yogis from Tibet do yoga.
Is that where it's from, like the word?
Yeah, they're yogis. And it's a Buddhist practice. And they say that it's scientifically based, but I would love to have the local medical doctor verify these claims that these people are making about yoga. But anyway, the yogis, they barely even wanted to show what these practices are because they're very dangerous, allegedly. And they would like jump up and snap their arms. It looked like the movement that they would make, which I shouldn't imitate because it's dangerous, allegedly. It's like snapping.
He just imitated it. His arm snapped.
So it's weird. And they were very one thing that was kind of a positive in my mind was that they're very anti the communist government of China. And you know how like those annoying people are like, well, you know, it's like that's not actually communism. It's like authoritarianism masks as communism, which they're not exactly wrong about, but they're like diverting from the point because they want to still promote communist beliefs. But anyway, my point is because the Chinese ravaged Tibet and sent the Dalai Lama out of the country, they are now coming and are like kind of politically against China. So that which is probably a positive for the U.S. as the U.S. and China seem to be embattled, like destined for a face off against each other as the cultures have different beliefs on freedom and things like that. So not to say that this is that they are against the Chinese people, the Chinese government, because there's a lot of people in China and I'm sure they all are not wishing the death of people in Tibet. But
I was part of a program called the CCP, but it was College Credit Plus.
Right.
So was the Chinese Communist Party.
I talked a lot more about that documentary than I thought. Oh, and then I watched Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me, which we have already referenced and is very depressing.
Yeah, and...
But amazing.
It's just weird because Special Agent Dale Cooper is obsessed with Tibet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there might be a lot there to explore.
Yeah, I think there is. One day. So, I've watched a few more. I watched Dune Part 2. Excellent. Great. I'm on the Timothée Chalamet train now. I was very adamant against him, against everything he stood for. And I still am. He doesn't stand for great things, but he's a good actor. I'll give him that. Eyes Without a Face, nothing to say. Me Time, Kevin Hart, Mark Wahlberg, Andrew Santino, gender representation.
Interesting.
Buddy film. Two stars, pretty stupid. The Gift, I vaguely seen it before. It's directed by Joel Edgerton, also starring him. So director...
Director-actor, Buster Keaton-esque.
Mm-hmm. All right. Kung Fu Panda 4. I just had to, you know, I love my Jack Black, and it was 2.5 stars, not great.
Oh.
Furious 5, we're not in it.
I had an opportunity to watch that movie in Charlotte, but I passed it up.
Yeah,
because hard. I had not seen Kung Fu Panda 2 or 3.
I mean, I oh really?
Didn't really feel like watching.
Oh yeah, it. You got to watch the second and third. And I'm gonna watch Despicable. I mean, I'm gonna watch all these sequels that come out that are like childhood films.
Yeah, I mean, the nostalgia. You got to.
Yeah, Darby O'Gill and the Little People. It's a Disney film from 1959, starring Albert Sharpe, and it's great. It's a comedy. It's about it's great special effects for 1959, but this guy goes in and finds the king of the leprechauns and befriends him and has three wishes and gets tricked and gets three more wishes because he finds him again. And basically, it's like a battle between the two, the king leprechaun and him and all the other leprechauns. It's funny. And then Fire Walk With Me. Sad. And Ben, you told me right before we recorded that you're glad that I'm staying over at your apartment tonight because you'd be scared of Bob.
Yep. Bob is the scariest character in any media I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So
same here.
And so now that my coughing fits are back, which I did get steroids for. Update on my health.
Oh, you got steroids?
Got steroids last week for my cough. It did help, but
good.
It still kind of hits every once in a while, but it's definitely better than it was.
Oh yeah, it was horrible.
It was really bad.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't got anything else.
Neither do I. We're both dragging, ready to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll close the vault.
Adios. Do 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 do.